Hello, everybody, and welcome to today's show. My name is Mfon, and I will be your host today. And in our usual fashion, we will be talking about a movie, and we are going to be looking at a movie called The 22nd of July. And what are the things we want to pick out of this movie? What we actually are looking at in this movie, because it's basically a story of a lone wolf who is angry with the system for some strange reason. And the way Paul Greengrass presents this movie is in the format where you are taken on a journey where you don't know if this individual is crazy or if he's really angry. So he goes out and he shoots politicians' children, I'll just call it that, and then he detonates a bomb in front of a federal building. So basically, you will know in the early parts of the film that it's politically motivated. Now, what we want to find out, or the things we want to make sense of, are primarily things like, what motivated this guy? Because it's not new in our society. We've heard of school shootings in America, and if you live in a country that have guns, you probably might expect to have or see one of these things once in a while. So the question we want to find out is, what motivates a guy like this? What gives him the confidence to come out and do this? And we also want to look at the kind of society that creates a guy like this. What kind of society is he living in? What is he angry about? There is no country we will live in, or you might find yourself, that you will not be angry with your government about something, but you rarely find people going out to commit mass murders. Of course, you see insurrections here and there, and different kind of crimes that will be committed basically to get the attention of the government. But you find in pockets of countries that have guns that people just go on this rant, and then we enter this debate of, was he crazy, or was he just so angry that he became crazy? Did his anger make him crazy? And for people who are like super experts in, you know, psychology, they might deduce a lot of things and have those debates. But we basically just try to make sense of the whole thing that happened as portrayed in this movie, and see exactly what are the things that can be done to make a better society. Thanks once again for tuning in, and after our conversation, we'll see you on the other side. Welcome, everybody, to today's show. How you doing, buddy?
I'm good.
Okay.
I'm doing good.
Yeah, so today's show actually is, we are going to be talking about a little bit about this movie called The 22nd of July. And as we usually do in our usual fashion, when we talk about movies where we try to look at movies and talk about its relevance to society. And I mean, for those of us who are joining this show for the first time, we are not a movie review, typically a movie review kind of show. What we do is basically we watch a movie and we talk about that movie. We use the movie as a lens to view society and basically what happens in society as it relates to the movie. So it could be we look at a movie and at the same time, we take a certain aspect of a movie that is relevant to what happens in society today, and then we just talk about it. That's principally what the Remote Talkatives or RT podcast is all about. So today we're going to be talking about the movie 22nd of July. And 22nd of July is a movie directed by Paul Greengrass. Now, Paul Greengrass is a guy that is known for these kind of movies. You know, he did United 93, which talks about
You remember in 1993, it talks about mm-hmm. how the plane that crashed into the Twin Towers. And basically, this movie was centered around what actually happened inside the plane, for those of us who have seen that movie. And so he's known for those kind of films. But 22nd of July talks about an event that happened in Norway. And it also shows how this Norwegian guy known as Breivik, and he goes as a lone wolf and he targets politicians' children, starts shooting them. It was a very, viewer discretion for people who are going to watch the film or people who have already And it talks about that. So Paul Greengrass directs this movie and it's also written by Paul Greengrass, although based on a true story. And it stars Anders Danielsen Lee, Jonas Strand, Gravil, and John Ogarden. When you say Utoya, right? Mm-hmm. If you put an O and you cross it in the middle, how do you pronounce words like that?
I will ask a Norwegian person when I see them. I don't want to appropriate anybody's culture. Or guess.
Yeah.
I have no idea what it means. I have no clue of how the lettering works in Norway. Norway, all the Scandinavian countries have all these letters with things on them, with dots or strike to the left. We also have it in our own culture too.
Am I sure I even know how to type that? I don't know. I'm not sure I know how to type it on the computer.
No, I think for phones, I know you hold. You hold that, and it shows you different variations of how to write a particular letter.
Mm.
Or you just choose to type in the language that you want to type in.
Yeah, I mean, it's something that if somebody had to do, you probably will figure it out anyway. It's not.
Yeah.
It shouldn't be so much of a big deal. But now I choose to, later on I'm going to be having a conversation with Stanley and. But for now, basically, one of the things I wanted to talk to you about this movie. How did this movie rob you, really, when you saw it within the confines of what is going on in...
The movie brought back memories because I actually was aware of it when it happened.
Mm.
When the incident happened in 2011, I was aware of it, peripherally. It was on news. I followed it for a while.
Mm.
And... at that time, I was a younger person, and I was screaming, "Just kill this guy, and just kill him!" Because I don't know how I would feel as a parent if the person who tries to murder my children cold-bloodedly is being given benefit of doubt. Given a chance to not pay for his crime. Because the whole point of him having a legal defense is that there's a possibility he may not pay for the crime.
Mm. Yeah.
And as a parent, I doubt I'll be able to live with that. I recall the story of the girl, the man who had three kids that were assaulted by the American coach not so long ago. And at the sentencing of the guy, the man asked the judge whether he could have 5 minutes with the man who assaulted, because three of his kids were part of either the volleyball or Olympic program. And he was like, he just needs 5 minutes to talk to the guy because three of his daughters were assaulted by this person.
Yeah.
And the judge was like, she understands where he's coming from. And, she can't do that. And the guy tries to jump over the subject and physically assault the man who molested three of his daughters.
Yeah.
And, if I'm the cop on duty that day, I think my reactions will be very slow. They got to him, they restrained him in time, but I don't think that day I'll be fast enough to restrain him, because a man who molests up to over 20, 30 girls over a long period, a man who is respected in society.
Yeah.
I don't see... I'm not that forgiving.
So, you see... Okay, let me for somebody who may not have seen this film or and never have the time to watch it, because I read one of the comments from somebody on one of our Facebook pages about, I think she said something about, you guys are doing the work that I'll never do. But sometimes when I listen, I want to watch the movie or I will not. Something along those lines, actually, which is okay. I mean, you can watch the movie if you want, or you can listen to the podcast. But I mean, if it makes you watch it, fine. If it makes you not watch it, like, this one is something that may be a little sensitive to some viewers because of. So it's basically, the film just talks about, you know, this guy called Anders Breivik. He is a young guy who is, you know, radicalized or politicized. Let me say radicalized would be a rather word, a strong word. And he decides that one of the ways he wants to adjust society is by taking up a gun and targeting politicians' children. First of all, he parks a car in front of a government building and detonates it. A bomb goes off, killing like 8 people, if I'm correct.
8 people, yeah.
Yeah, and then he takes the same, then from there he proceeds to a summer camp where most of these government children, they are just, you know, children of government officials are having this kind of
summer camp.
Summer camp, yeah. And this summer camp, they are, he goes there and literally starts randomly shooting. And I think he kills around 69 people. And
injures about 200.
Were children. Children of probably most of the people he just detonated a bomb in front of their building.
Yeah.
And the reason I said that, so he gets arrested, because I don't want to dwell too much on the story. He gets arrested and he goes to, and some of the scenes you see, he gets arrested and this guy actually, he says the finger he uses to shoot, that he hurt his finger. That he hurt his finger, that the finger, he needs some medication, he needs medical. You just kill 69 people. You just killed
69 people.
Or is it 77 people? I'm talking of the finger you're complaining about that you used to kill 60 people.
Yeah.
And in civil society, now, in civil society here, they arrest you, they put you in a room. I just want to embellish it by saying they give you tea and coffee or wine or food.
They actually did give him.
They give him beverage. Coffee, right?
They gave him pizza. He was eating a pizza.
Quench your thirst. Yeah, you just killed 69 people, but relax. Just quench your thirst. You know, relax. You know, your finger hurts. We're going to take care of that. Now, in the state of Virginia recently, because this vice president, the vice presidential candidate for Hillary Clinton during their campaign, I think he has always been, when he was the governor of the state of Virginia, he was always against the death penalty. Even as a governor, he would never, you know, but see, because of the politics he was facing, he couldn't fight it. But in, I think a couple of days ago or so, they actually did win in terms of, now it's official, the death penalty has now been removed from the state of Virginia. So, I mean, you know, but Virginia is a state that has been known to have killed a lot of people that were of the death penalty. Mm-hmm. Now, the lone wolf that decides, I just want to pick up a gun and go to the store and shoot a couple of people, and you know you're just going to be arrested. You know they're just going to arrest you, then you're going to go sit inside one, take tea and coffee, and feel you have a voice, like Breivik feels, oh, I have a voice, I'm going to talk. I want people to know I'm a member of the Knight Templar. I know that what we want to do, we want to change society and stuff like that. Do you think that, because you see, you said you earlier that you're not that forgiving, and I'm thinking that, okay, do you think that if these people know that, look, if I do stuff like this, they're not even going to give me a chance to talk. They're just going to, you know, just shoot me or kill me or hang me or just go. Do you think they would go ahead and do stuff like that?
Well, I doubt the death penalty necessarily deters crime per se. You know, in Asia, in some countries in Asia, there's a death penalty for people that carry drugs. But because there's a death penalty for people that carry drugs to some Asian countries, the reward for carrying drugs to those Asian countries is much higher than the reward for carrying drugs to other countries. So it doesn't necessarily stop it. I don't have the stats to prove that it stops it per se. But what I would say is, at the very least, it will give the people affected some form of closure. Yes, revenge is not necessarily the best answer to a lot of things. But for a parent who has to bury their child, or for a society who has to use their taxes to feed this person, the prison system, I don't think certain people, when proving beyond reasonable doubt that they were the ones who committed those acts of terror, which are meant to actually destabilize the society, because most of the time when people do these things, they say they wanted to do this, they wanted to achieve this aim, and those aims usually go at cross purposes with the society at that moment. I don't think those people deserve to be in that society, either locked up or not. That's my personal
view. When you say you don't think they need to be in that society, because you see, I want to know which part of the spectrum.
I'm in full support of the death penalty in certain situations.
So, okay, let us bring it home. Because you see, I am of the opinion. Now, you see, death penalty, you know, everything in America is politicized. If you say defund the police, it's a political part of the. If you say reform the police, they'll say, oh no. If you say Black Lives Matter, they'll say you're on this policy. If you say white lives, or you say all lives matter, you are on this part. So everything is politicized in terms of language here. Now, pro-death penalty death penalty, or people who support the death penalty, or people who don't support the death penalty, these are people on two sides of even political aspect, because it's like everything is politicized.
Mm-hmm.
So the thing here is that the death penalty now, I am of the opinion, right, that if somebody believes that, oh, look, I'm angry, I don't like what's going on in my society, and I just feel like these people, these liberals, or these people who support abortion and all that, I'm going to burn up this hospital, I'm going to shoot some people. Now, don't you agree that there will be a deterrent? No, let me not use the word deterrent. Don't you think that people just feel like, if I just go and do this thing, what's the worst that will happen? I believe conscious people who are not mentally insane count the costs. And they will say, look, what's the worst that could happen? If I do this thing now, maybe I'll just go to jail. If I do this thing, they're going to kill me. So if they feel nothing is going to happen, okay, at the end of the day, what they're just going to do is, okay, yes, I'm going to go to jail. I don't care. Okay, it's jail. But if you know that if they get you, they're going to kill you. I am of the opinion that it will be a huge deterrent for some people. They probably would consider, because you see, even when you use
because there's still some extreme people that that actually want to die.
Who are drug dealers? They will never think of going to Asia because Dada is death.
Yeah,
they will never think of going there. So they may be a drug dealer. They may try some of these countries that they feel, oh look, if I go here, what's the worst that will happen? Which I think every criminal mind that is not insane should ask himself. What's the worst that will happen? Okay, they will send me to jail. I'm willing to take the risk for this. But when they know that, look, dude, if they catch you, they're going to kill you, or you're just going to go through a death sentence. I feel it may be a deterrent.
So yeah, the truth about it is, I'm not so sure it causes a deterrent for people, the whole having a death penalty thing. I am up for it because I feel it gives closure to, at the very least, the victims of the crime, if it was a specific crime committed, or the society at large, people will sleep better knowing that someone who decides to not be a productive member of the society is no longer a member of their society. So personally, I'm in full support of the death penalty. in certain situations.
So you're a pro death penalty guy.
Yes. After full rigor. Because, okay, for example, you know, 22nd of July happened and it made news and everything. It also happened in Nigeria. In 2014, 59 boys were killed in the hostel by these dastardly people, Boko Haram. They were killed in school. I mean, for what? Because you don't want them to be educated a certain way. You go there and you kill them. Young boys, 13-year-olds, 14-year-olds, similar situation, 59. You know, so I don't know if I'm the arresting officer, whether I will, you know, try to put handcuffs on somebody's hands or just shoot the person in the head. I mean, I don't think there's any question to be asked when you see someone that has willfully murdered children. I can understand children dying in the line of fire in a war. You know, two neighboring people are fighting and collateral damage, children or women were killed. But deliberately wanting to harm children to get a reaction from adults or from the government, I feel that reaction should be you are dead. I don't know how to sugarcoat it. I don't know how to put it. People might, I might get canceled. I might get, you know, blacklisted. But I can't be a parent. It's my job to make sure that this child grows up to be a productive member of society, to be productive to themselves, to live well, to live long, to outlive me. And somebody wakes up somewhere, has a grievance with a government, refuses to dialogue with the government through peaceful means, refuses to engage the government as combatants, and kill people's children, people that have no conflict with them whatsoever. That is the biggest act of cowardice I've ever seen in my life.
It's seriously.
Okay. Imagine two of us are arguing, I go have kids. Come on. It's crazy.
Yeah, I see.
Anyway. I can't picture allowing the person to live.
Okay, the thing about it is that, like, in most African countries, or as they call us, third world countries, they would say that we practice things like jungle justice, and you know that most of advanced countries, what we do in advanced countries is that we are practicing civilization. We're civilized.
Civilization gives you a chance.
Civilization is what brings about the whole thing about somebody knows that, okay, I can murder 50 people, and then they're first of all going to give me a cup of coffee, give me good health care, medication, and all that. So I think I could.
Just like that boy that shot up the church.
Yeah.
He took it for burgers.
It's the same thing. It's the same thing. That's what I'm trying to talk about now. Civil society. The society and the laws that govern society. When you talk of human rights, the person is a human being. Yes, yes.
Anybody that takes another person's life has lost the right to their own human rights. As far as I'm concerned.
That is pro-death penalty ideology, and is a political divide.
I will say this.
They think you're a king. they think you're a third world, low class, shithole.
If I ever get to the Supreme Court,
for you to be even thinking like that,
they should be careful.
So okay, here's the thing. So moving forward, we're going to take a little break. I did go talk with Stanley about this, and basically I looked at it from the angle of the personality of Breivik and what actually motivates him, and looked at the country as a whole, what his grievance was, and then when we come back, basically we just talk about it and see exactly what we can make out of it. Thank you, Stanley, for joining me in this particular conversation as we try to look at exactly, you know, motives and reasons why somebody would do something like this based on the film, the 22nd of July. It's always a pleasure having you.
Thank you. It's a pleasure having me here. Thank
yes. So first of all, what is your take on the filmmaker's purview of this particular movie? You know, this is not an easy movie to watch, considering the fact that sometimes we know it's a true story. And when you know it's a true story, sometimes when we look at these things and we see the whole drama unfold, and then we look at the characters, I cannot deny the fact that sometimes it's easier for me to accept that it's fiction. If you tell me it's fiction, that look, this thing is something somebody just wrote out of the figment of his imagination, I would even be happy. I say, okay, yeah, it's one of those ideas, but this is some real thing that has been happening in our society. And we hear it on the news. It's like it's far away, but these are things that people... What builds a character like Breivik?
That's a very good question. The movie actually reminds me... I remember just going back to 2011 when it was breaking news on CNN and the whole world was stunned to see this event unfold before our eyes, especially Norway, especially the Scandinavian countries that are known to be very peaceful and quiet, you know. Mm-hmm. But then, this year, we also make it 10 years. July 22nd this year, 2001, we make it 10 years since that event took place. Right. It's very That's disheartening. Right. Yes, it's very right. disheartening to watch one that, even as a parent, I was actually shaken when there was this scene where this mother and father just left the parliament, the prime minister's office area, that was just bombed. And only to find out that their own kids were at the camp being threatened. I just imagine that drive the parents were taking to go to the camp. Yeah. And you know, I was wondering if I was the one driving the car, my wife, what would happen? It is a highly emotionally intense, chaotic time that nobody really wants to be in. Now, yeah. from your question now regarding what would have built this whole character up. It's a whole lot multidimensional, and it's one of the problems that is being faced currently right now.
Yeah,
because this is a whole new dimension. But what caused it is the world is changing. You know, you can't have nobody shutting his doors again, except North Korea, that has decided to shut its borders to people. But when a country is growing, you need more people to come in, from refugees, from highly skilled people, and all this helped to build a multicultural society. But it also threatens a lot of people too as well. Most of the people who claim to be native of that place, seeing people coming in, getting better jobs than them, and they just feel, look at this guy, he's a visitor and yeah, doing far better than me. But those people come with determination, they come from survival, and they are more determined to progress and grow. Whereas the natives feel entitled. With this entitlement comes resentment. And this is what we are beginning to see pop up in Europe, in most parts of Europe, and also now in America.
Yeah.
And really coming up, the alt-right, the Proud Boys, the supremacy, all trying to talk about being the oath keepers or gatekeepers, what they call themselves.
Yeah, a lot of them.
Yeah. So now, in fact, Breivik mentioned that this is going to be, he's going to go far beyond him. And we are still yet to scratch the surface. And the most deadly part of this is that it is homegrown terrors. These are not the external people who come in, like the 9/11 coming to bomb your country. No, these are homegrown terrors who are beginning to perpetrate this act of terrorism among their own.
Yeah.
And if you look at the book, the July 22nd was based on a book by a journalist in Norway. Yeah. And the title is Among Us. This to show you that it is happening around us. And it is the problem now that FBI is trying to battle regarding the Capitol insurrection, because it's just, they didn't expect that homegrown terrorists would do this. Everybody would be expecting.
The questions I have actually are like, you know, okay, you said something actually profound, that countries need people to come in, because I can't help but to, you know, when Breivik was arrested, because when we want to determine why did somebody do something, he said a couple of things, and he believes that he is not a lone voice. A lot of people are with him. And when he was in court, he said something, He said, I speak on behalf of Europeans that have been deprived of their ethnic, indigenous, cultural, and territorial rights. The prosecution tells me I'm insane. They do this because they fear me, because I have committed the most sophisticated and most political assassination, blah, blah. Some people started working out. They said, there are no real democracies. Is it democratic for a nation not to be consulted whether it becomes multicultural? My question here is that, okay, these nations want people to come in. Like a lot of countries want people to come in because maybe they need the population, like you rightly mentioned. Is there a way to filter out the inevitable multiculturalism that is going to come with this? Because when this multiculturalism comes and then you have individuals like this that are dissatisfied, they seem they don't like the fact that these people are going to come here. But yeah, they are contributing one way to the economy. They are paying taxes. Or is this thing inevitable? It's just going to keep continuing for as much as, because Joe Biden just opened. I mean, basically, he's going to make immigration much more easier now as against an outgoing Trump that just comes. So we are going to still experience more of this coming on, you know. Is there a way for countries to feel, oh, look, I think if we're going to open our borders, it probably means that we have to find a way to get these people in and then assimilate them so that we don't start having... Is there any way to fix that kind of thing? Or we just all do like North Korea and everybody stay in their houses?
Yeah, there's no way. It's inevitable. Immigration has been a long debated issue right from time. Everybody has migrated. Animals migrate. Humans migrate. So, and migration, if you look at it, is caused by a lot of factors. Sometimes you could have a kind of disaster in certain region, and you see people moving to other places where they have to find shelter. Mm-hmm. And sometimes it could be for economic reasons as well. But there are so many reasons why people migrate. And if you look at America as it is today, it's a country based on migration. From the early European settlers to later, you started having, you know, the economic issue from the Europe, when Europe was in disaster, you know, in terms of economically after the Second World War, there were a lot of migration to America in terms of people moving. You have the Irish, you have the Italians, you know, you have the Dutch. They all moved, settled down in different places in America, and, you know, started growing. The blacks actually came in there through probably slave trade. You know, when they were shipped down to America to work at the plantations. You see, so you have this, you know, all these are all economic issues that probably made some people to move. If you look at Britain too as well, apart from the blacks that were being traded as slave trade, you also have the Jamaicans that came in to build the underground, the railway underground and other big infrastructures, because they needed those kind of labor, which their own people cannot do. And when these people come in, and they're going to stay for a long period of time, because these projects are actually very long-term projects, they also have their kids there. They take care. They also get take advantage of the social welfare of that country, and they settle down there. Now, you also have other factors that, you know, kind of promote this migration. So economic reasons, America is enjoying it today with multicultural people are bringing in new skills. You have all the people who are making the money. They are from probably different other countries, not even fully American, or maybe their parents gave birth to them in America. But this immigration has made America to become a much more competitive nation. And also, it is also happening in other countries now that are beginning to open their borders through highly skilled immigrations policies to bring in the best of the brains.
But the people who live in the country, I get it. The thing is, the people who live in the country it appears these people don't see that way. And as much as we are talking about, you know, what the country as a whole needs, considering that this movie talks about somebody who claims to be a member of a group called the Knight Templars. And in America, there are tons of different groups, the 1 percenters, or is it the 2 percenters? I forgot their name. And the Proud Boys, like you rightly mentioned, and a lot of other groups. The thing here I'm thinking about is that as much as we may see, you know, people say as more people come into the country, they bring all their skills in totality, the country will be better than it was before because of all these new people. But when you have people like a Breivik, who is talking about his anti-immigration, and I think in his particular case, he's talking about the Knight Templars is an organization that was set up after September 11. This is not something that happened in their own country. This is something that happened in America. And I think in his own particular case, he was anti-Muslim. So being immigration as a whole, America, if we want to look at this picture, because in recent times we've had stories of people going to this guy who went to a spa and shot people and they died, and they're talking about Asian people. They're saying, is it they hate crime or is he crazy? And right now, because the fact that we had the uprising at the Capitol and people actually went there to protest, we ask a question and say, how do you appease these people? Because first of all, these people do not agree that the country is better having all this influx of people inside it, because they are losing their culture, they are losing their identity, as Breivik actually stated when he had his day in court. So is there anything that can be done about these people? Are they a voice that should be listened to, or are they like a shrinking market?
Yes, that's a very good question, Ofun. They are a voice we need to listen to because they have concerns. And I feel that politicians should do a lot of job trying to enlighten most of these people why they are doing this. But you see, when you look at it from the angle of existential, they feel they are threatened. Their way of life is threatened. So they have a concern. It's just like you, maybe just take, for example, in your local village, and all of a sudden, you just have foreigners invading your local village, settling, buying lands. You know, you feel threatened, whether you like it or not, because you feel, you have these foreigners coming here. So definitely they have a concern. But sometimes you have politicians who also flame this hatred and talk to these people. The same thing we see where people use religion as a way of fighting the other people, say, no, you're a Muslim, you're a Christian. Politicians take advantage of this discord and they try to flame it up. So if politicians can do a better job to enlighten these people, like, look, we need to open our borders because there are certain skills we don't have here. And we have to bring people who can do them. Take, for example, even like you talk about Mexico, you know, you see all these people coming from different places. Some of them come to work in the farms, in the big, you know, large-scale farms, and they pick all the fruits. They do those jobs, which Americans who are definitely American citizens will not want to do.
Yeah.
You see them do, yes, they don't want to do. I remember when they did this, a lot of food were wasted in the farmlands, because nobody was ready to pick them up. Even though when you want to pay somebody that money who is a citizen born and bred in America, I say that's a very, very, it's an insult to it. But who's going to pick it up? So these are the things that they need to let them know, that you have to get this cheap labor that come in. After a while, they go back. Most countries do this. But then, after a while, these people want to stay in this country. They want to live here. And that's why they have to do certain citizen tests so that to know if you have assimilated the culture of the American people or the culture of the host country, so that you can now speak their language, look at their values, look at the way they do things and be part of them. So it has to be like a proper education enlightenment to the populace to let them know the benefit of this immigration policy. Now, someone like a Biden is coming in from the part of, yes, it's going to bring economic prosperity to America, because it has happened like that. For he is a migrant. His generation, his grandfather is from Ireland. Trump is from Germany. You see how they all came in here after like two generations. They're all settled down here. So they all came for a reason. And when they come, these people will earn money and they'll pay their taxes. So yeah, that's where they see it from. And also with compassion as well. You can't just leave people there running from Honduras. That place is already a wasteland. And a lot of people are running out from those areas to come and search for better life. Even have having to go through some kind of terrible journey all the way and risk their life to get there. It would be really morally wrong to just turn them and say, go back to your country, we don't need you here. And yet, there are still opportunities for them in America to probably work in farms, earn some money, and get them assimilated over time into the society. So, but you see now, politicians are making, in terms of policy war. Oh, when Trump did it, the Democrats said, no, this is not good. You can't keep children in cage. Now Biden has come in, and now the Republicans are going out, blowing it out open. Look, old, our country is in big trouble.
Exactly.
We opened all the southern border. So it's a political game. And the same thing is also playing out too as well. Even the first press conference that Biden gave. And
Conference. I happen to see it.
He was trying to make a distinction that the Republicans that are opposing this in terms of most of his policy now are just those in Capitol Hill. That the real Republicans, the voters, the electorate, are happy with what he's doing. So how do you make that distinction? Because you are in the Capitol, because you are there, you have a platform. You now say, oh, Biden has made a tremendous error. He has done this, he has done that. You don't like the $1.9 trillion bill, but you like tax cuts to the wealthy people.
If we get into this, if we get into the media, you know, the way the media and politicians actually spew these things out, I just feel like we're not going to get out of it because the media already is polarized, especially in America. But what do you think, in fact, before I leave you, what is the responsibility of the people who bring out all this rhetoric? Okay, here we are. We had a Donald Trump come out and say, let us march to the Capitol. We are going to take this country. And then a lot of people now followed him. And then eventually, when they put him on trial, he got exonerated. But right now, the FBI is hounding every single person that walked his 2 feet down to that Capitol. And there is it's a very funny picture because it's as if, oh, every single lawyer trying to defend these people are saying that it is based off of what was said to them. But now the guy in question, he's free as a bird and people are still pandering to him politically. But for you that used your leg, you being the Breivik now, because if you listen critically in this movie, you remember there is a scene where one of the people that inspired him, of which he quoted in his memoir when he said the European Declaration of Independence, and he wrote in his manifesto, of which he referenced somebody, I cannot remember his name from that movie. But when this man appeared in court, I don't know, for lack of a better way to put it, he threw him under the bus. He said, okay, when they asked him questions with regards to this guy, he said, was he a leader? He just basically said, I met him online. He said, was he a leader? The guy asked him, oh, he wanted to be. He said that he liked to lead missions online, quoting that he liked to play all these war games and Warcraft and all of that. And then he said, was Mr. Breivik your leader? He said, no, he was not. Trying to basically distinct him. But this is a guy that his rhetoric has been out there. And actually, this rhetoric is, you know, is what has been used to inspire people like a Breivik to do what he did, you know. So, but at the end of the day, he now told him, in fact, he concluded that, he said that what Breivik did is not going to change society or where society is doing. Why does a lone wolf, is a lone wolf crazy or is he just really, really angry? And based on your experience, if somebody is mentally ill, it appears I'm asking a lot of questions, but it's just really one question. Because I'm thinking about the lone wolf that just picks up a gun, goes to a store and, you know, targets certain people of a certain race, thinking that they are his problem. So I'm thinking, a lone wolf, does a lone wolf actually think he's changing society or he's just crazy?
Well, in the minds of the lone wolf, he thinks he's changing society. And most people who are organized don't like lone wolves because they believe they disrupt their plans. Right. You have a group of people who come together trying to come up with a much more coordinated strategy of how they can turn the tide. So there might be a group of people online working together. Yes, we know we have alt-right, we have the Proud Boys, we have all these groups. But you see, they won't like one person who goes on his own to kill multiple people like a multiple homicide. And it kind of puts a kind of bad image on them. And they don't want that. They will probably not do the same thing that he's doing. They will probably like to go through the way of maybe policy, lobbying, get politicians like them who can go and be part of the parliament, representatives, and fight for their cause. That right. is the way they want to do it. And we see that happening too in America, where you're beginning to have the right wings coming into politics now, and you mm-hmm. have the majority of them, the likes of that. They come in and they are beginning to change policies, come up with policies that are probably in the interest of their members' concerns. So a lone wolf is one that can create chaos. And that man who was actually using those rhetorics, you know, was doing that because using rhetoric is just a way to convince people of lies and art of persuasion. We know that. And of course, that's one of the tools politicians use a lot. So definitely, but the
but you agree that it gives birth to the lone wolf, these rhetorics?
Of course it does give birth to the lone wolf. There are people who read this message, they internalize it, and they take it out there and create mayhem. So that's the danger about lone wolves, because there's nobody around them probably guiding them, and they just feel they've interpreted this message, and you were probably talking directly to them. And if you look at Breivik, he was diagnosed for what they call grandiose delusion. He was feeling that he was a leader of the pack. He was a leader. He had this, but all those things were just on top of his head.
In simple man's English, he was crazy.
He was delusional. He was. Remember, two evaluations were carried out of Breivik.
Yeah.
The first one said that he was schizophrenia, which is a very, very, very serious issue, and later. The second evaluation also found him responsible. The first one would have made him go scot-free, but he knew that he has already the hatred from the citizenry, and somebody could wake up one day and just put a gun in his head and kill him. Yeah. But at the second time, he too wants to show that I'm not crazy, I know what I'm doing, and he has to...
Because he wants to prove a point.
Yes, he wants to prove a point. But his mentor, so-called online mentor, threw him under the bus and said, dude, this is not what we want. We want somebody, we want to work together as a group, not just one person running with guns and killing people. You know, they don't like that kind of stuff. We can pass our message on, but we don't have to kill people to pass our message. So that is one of the area I see. I see this to answer your question.
Yeah, during the COVID era, I read this this book by Saul Alinsky, and the name of this book is Rules for Radicals. It's an old book, actually, and there's something he said, and that he said that evolution, like what we see as evolution in society, where maybe if slave trade was normal now, they had to fight a civil war, blood was shed to change society away from slavery to what. So he argues in his book that revolution or evolutions that we see in society are actually revolutions, but it's the people who do not partake in these revolutions that see it as a natural evolution of society. But I just feel that, the thing is, the lone wolf always argues that when they go through the normal process of governance and they do not get any kind of feedback or results, and they have tried this and that, they are pushed to a corner, because just the vibe I get in America is that the right wing actually just believes that they are not actually being heard. The anger is real. They believe that certain people have the right to say certain things, but whenever they say certain things, they are not seen. You know, within that, they feel like they are not going to be heard. And 9 out of 10 times, you never hear that a lone wolf. Most of the times you hear about a lone wolf in America, at times the media always presents it as somebody that leans right. And that's just actually just what I think, that sometimes it appears one person feels cheated and then they feel there's no other thing. And maybe we may understand it or never understand it, but if we boil it down to psychotic or psychosis that leads people to do this, then it is not criminal. Then there's a problem. Maybe the rhetoric should be toned down. Maybe something could happen so that people can just feel safer. Because right now, America is not really talking about foreign threats now. Everybody is thinking about, do I go to the movies? Maybe I just sit down at home and watch the movie. Do I go to the store? Maybe I just order online. Because you don't know where the next angry person is going to surface from at the end of the day. Because everybody right now is really angry. And when I saw this movie, I just said, homegrown is worse than foreign. Foreign can be managed, but homegrown can be. Anyway, yeah.
I don't really see much of foreign attacks these days. I see it as more of, that is where the warfare has changed. It's now homegrown indoctrinations, you know.
Yeah.
What you tell kids, the kind of information you pass on to your children when they become youths, what kind of things do they get themselves indulged in? And if they start joining all these groups, they start being indoctrinated, and that is even the very, very fertile form of terrorism, because you can just be in the theater. Yeah, of course, everybody's like, yeah, we're all Americans. And all of a sudden, somebody just gets up and say, you know what? F you up, all you guys. And he does less of the bomb and, you know, does. But,
yeah.
And these are people who are really, they are not like foreigners. They are more of the homegrown natives who are doing this. If you have an Arab person, let us say that guy was, Brevich was an Arab. Of course, they would have, from Absolutely. The beginning, you know, start cutting him down because he's seen as a threat. And this goes again to look at the definition of terrorism, how we define it. And it was always saying that if it was an Arab person that did that same thing, you would have seen it as, oh, there's a homegrown terror. Yeah. This is a terrorist attack by the Arabs and so, or is a black man, you know, he has been attacked. But now when you say it's a white guy doing the terror, we're like, how do we define this? That's the problem now that everybody's facing.
Yeah.
How do you define your own homegrown terror and know how to watch everybody and be careful, you know, how you put a lot of additional checks and balances to prevent this kind of things from happening. You
know? Okay. So, excellent, excellent. Man, we can talk about this all day, really, and it's sometimes it's
definitely
but thank you so much for your reasonable, I mean, input, and it's always good. Until we actually talk about this again, really appreciate your input. Thank you so much.
And thank you, Mfon, for having me here. Thanks.
Okay. So, welcome back. This conversation I had with Stanley, who basically, you know, being a behavioral psychologist and everything, and he's able to see from the angle of Breivik, what is his grievance, what motivates a Breivik to do what he does. And one of my major concerns was, where is the thin line between mental health and criminality? And somebody is exonerated because he is mentally ill. And despite the fact that the lawyers are trying to use mental health as a loophole to get him out of this trouble, which presupposes that mental health, of course, will get you out of this trouble. Of course, you're sick. Let's understand you're sick, you know? So, I mean, if you were okay, you probably wouldn't have done this. But we've seen in society where people go and do some kind of a crazy. So you can't tell me that everybody that went to Washington, D.C. on the 6th of January, that all of them were crazy. Six people died.
Yeah.
So it's not all of them that were crazy. Maybe some of them were crazy, but not all of them. So the issue here now is that based on what the conversation I had with him, what do you think? You think that you think everybody is, I mean, that the fact that you're mentally ill, which could be a possibility for you to commit such a hideous crime, because there may be an argument. Do you think you
well,
part of the death penalty in this case?
I think once a crime of a certain magnitude has been committed, I don't even think that should be brought into bear. For me,
if somebody health, that's the person's mental
if
health.
So, if someone that is mentally crazy was calm enough to prepare, plan, load a weapon. I mean, if you take 22nd of July as a case study, the guy actually blew a bomb to distract people, really. That was actually, he didn't even plan whether there were people there or not. He just, okay, this bomb is big enough to do some damage. He did it and actually did what he really wanted to do, was kill the children of the elites and the political class who he knew were at the summer camp at that moment. So he did that and used the excuse of him being dressed as a police officer to get into the camp to tell them about something he just did, making it look as if he was there to protect them. And once he gets to the camp and kills all the, you know, the main adults, he starts shooting everybody up.
Hold on, is that
so now
for his mental competency? You believe?
Yeah, for me, that's argument of mental competency. So for now, if some for some reason there's some mental disability that's stopping him from seeing what he's doing in the bad light.
Yeah.
Let's assume that's what they're trying to, because that's what they're trying to say. He's mentally stable, so that's why he did this thing.
That's what the lawyers want to get him off. Yeah.
So if for whatever, even if there's a mental instability that causes that, I personally believe that yes, it's unfortunate this person was like this or like that, but he has killed 69 children, innocent children, cut down in their youth. It does not matter. Somebody needs to be punished for that crime. There needs to be a consequence to crime. What the government now needs to do personally is to find out how to prevent those crimes from happening. But once the crime has been committed, there needs to be recompense.
So that person needs to go.
Yeah.
Person needs to go.
If it's death penalty, you know, if I, you know, the time I say, like, I keep saying, I use the word personally a lot because I know that not everybody agrees with me. I can I can be a hardliner in certain things because there are certain things I value too much for it to be taken lightly. I value life so much that I believe if someone decides to take life in that manner, the person does not deserve to have that life that they have. That is what I believe.
I have
I also know that I live in a civil society, and so there are some places where, like the guy, what he ended up getting was solitary confinement. I'm okay with that. If people, if the justice system has, you know, allowed for that to happen. But personally, if I'm the judge and there is a death penalty, the person is going to get the death penalty.
Okay.
Simple.
Some of these movies, like when we watch them, I try not to, I try to look through a window, like, and you know, I'm still of the opinion, I know I've been arguing with a lot, a major sociologist will argue with me and say, no, objectivity cannot be a myth. Sometimes we have to look at things objectively, but dude, we all come from different pocket hole. We all come from different caves.
And
we come from different caves. What you know and what has made you who you are and all your experiences of life will always make you have an opinion that other people may never see through your lenses. So this is my argument for the fact that objectivity is a myth, but I guess social scientists, pure social scientists, may have a way of looking at things objectively and feel like, okay, let us look at this. They may have to, maybe through methods, scientific methods, and actually look at something objectively and get some kind of analysis out of it. But the issue of death penalty as a deterrent and from the lone wolf is like, because the lone wolf can be deemed crazy, but this guy purported not crazy. So don't try to tell me I'm crazy. I knew what I was doing. But for people who have basic experience in mental health, you know, the mental, the person who is crazy does not actually think he's crazy. Most of the times they feel that you're the one that's crazy. And there are others that will argue that everybody has some level of psychosis, because if you, if you're thinking in a certain way, some people may judge you and feel like you have a level of psychosis. But what I'm actually looking at is, you know, like Stanley mentioned things like multiculturalism and how countries need people to come in. And considering that they come into the country and they come in from other country, they come in with different cultures. They come in with different ideologies. They come in with different ways of life to come and settle in your country. In some countries, they have Chinatown. Even in Nigeria, you have places where Chinese people, that's the colonizer area, and they try to bring their own culture into that. So it's something that is not going to go away sometime soon if we're going to have these people that keep getting angry that people are going to come into their country. If we are going to, it means it's not going to change, because for as much as countries will keep needing people to come in, some countries that feel, no, we don't need. I think I agree with him when he says that there are certain jobs some people don't want to do. I live in America. There are certain jobs Americans will not do. I promise you, that is a real thing. You're going to need people that are coming from Mexico, from Africa, and from all these other countries that will be willing to take those kind of jobs for the amount of money you're willing to pay for it. Mm-hmm. But the average American guy may probably say, man, I ain't doing that. So the thing now is that for those countries that are going to need these people to be able to balance the ecosystem of the workforce and, you know, the people are getting older and dying, and then the youth who constitutes their youth, how are they thinking? So it's still going to mean that there are people, if you just decide that, no, we don't want Muslims in our country like a Breivik. We don't want Muslims in your country.
And in Europe, you don't want most of Europe.
You don't want that. You don't want to force us to this thing. And then the way you choose to go about it is to become a lone wolf. At the end of the day, people who seem to be more organized just feel like the lone wolf is their problem, which I think Stanley did mention. It's a problem. You're not helping us organize ourselves well, because now when you go and do this kind of thing, what the media and everybody will report, they will say, oh, it's a QAnon. And then some of the Republicans feel, we don't want to be identified with the QAnon. But the thing is that now when you go and you say all those things and you commit all those acts, the court of public opinion rubs all of you together in the same bucket just because you agreed with one thing. And these are the problems that we see. These are the things that we see in terms of it. So, is there a solution? I think, was it you that introduced me to this guy they call Dr. Omar Johnson, who...
Yes, Omar Johnson.
He says it's anti-multiculturalism.
And it's an opinion.
It's an opinion, which I believe everybody has their right to their opinion. It's your right to say how you feel. But what do you think? Can we all just, in a world of globalization, can we all just...
We all just get along.
...and function still? You think we can?
Yes, we can. America has shown that, to a large extent, that different cultures coming into one place can and will work. The thing is, when societies get to a certain point and there's no longer any real need for what people understand as growth to occur, I think people now start getting complacent. People start getting entitled. You know, for example, as you mentioned, that people that won't do certain jobs in certain places, because if that's your society you grow up, maybe someone's dad was a cleaner. He's the son of the cleaner. His mom too was a cleaner. He now aspires to be from the upper class, you know, move to the next level. Mm. So in moving to the next level, he will not necessarily want to be a cleaner. He'll want to move to the next job, you know, the next level. Yeah. So everybody, the society needs a cleaner. Now, are we now saying that because the parents of that child or the cleaner, that person's child must be a cleaner? No. But the society needs to cater to that thing. And that's why the whole ecosystem with migration and everything comes in. You know, people from other places, from countries not doing as well as that place, will come in and handle those jobs, you know, and vice versa, you know, cross migration and all that stuff. So multiculturalism is here to stay. For some people who don't see things that broadly, they get scared that maybe they will lose their identity. You know, for some white people, part of their reason for racism or part of their fear of other people is the fact that in a society where everybody is mixing, where white and black mix together equally, eventually you end up not having any pure white children. because melanin and, you know, all that thing, you have half caste everywhere. So you can't maintain a pure bloodline. And, you know, so many funny, funny things that don't really matter. You know, it doesn't matter. What matters is your values, how productive you are to the place, and your family values, your society's values, your community's values. You know, so people that rally against it by killing other people, they're making matters worse, because in the end, how do you fully integrate when you perpetually create an enemy? You know, I can't imagine now being a sibling to one of the 69 that were killed and value people that think the way Andres thinks, how Breivik thinks. Mm-hmm. I cannot value anybody like that. And so you've not created an enemy of me almost permanently. You know, anywhere I see people that have that ideology, even if the person is largely peaceful, we're no longer going to integrate. I will never be friends with that person. I will try not to do business with that person. If I find out that somebody related to me is trying to, you know, get romantically involved with somebody, I'll try my best to stop it. You know, I know those things. I just perpetrate, you know, anger and, you know, viciousness, this cycle of viciousness that never ends. You know, it's being violent against someone that doesn't look like you, or doesn't sound like you, or talk like you, or not from the same sexual orientation as you. It's just stupid and unnecessary. You know, I don't get it.
The reality is that is why some people try to accuse them of some kind of psychosis, or are you crazy that you're just thinking like this. But the issue is that they are always going to be there. And there are people who, they definitely will not agree. No matter what we do, we can talk about it forever. They're not going to agree. And like, okay, in recent times now in America, we are talking about somebody went to a spa and shot people. Now there's this debate about whether these people are, some 8 of them were Asian or a certain number of them were Asian. Mm. And now they're talking about, is it an Asian hate or not? That debate is going on, which for me, it's whatever it is. So if they try to draw analogies and the media puts it out there and everybody just thinks what they want to think about on the matter and draw their own conclusions, it's easy to conclude, oh, it was racially motivated and everything. And there's another angle of it. I said, man, this guy was crazy. Now, whatever aspect anybody wants to believe, you understand? Mm-hmm. First of all, if you want to be objective, which is hard, is you are not in the person's mind. You don't know what he was thinking about, right? Mm-hmm. He could be crazy. Mm-hmm. You understand? But I think they now took it out on the police officer who said he was having a bad day. And I mean, you know, when things like this happen, people have died. Don't talk. Don't say anything. Just be quiet. First of all, he went and now said
he was having a bad day.
People have died. Now went and said he's having a bad day. Okay. So
as Chris Rock said, as the professors, we are not allowed to have a bad day.
You're not, yeah. I mean, you're trying to build that. You have no choice. You have to be up and doing. So the thing here is that we might not have all the answers, but at the end of the day, I believe that, you see, in a world where we are becoming globalized, countries are depending on each other for something and all that. The problem is the human being, because in countries, you may call it racism. In some other countries, you call it tribalism. In some other countries, it may have a different name. People just don't agree with each other and just feel like the different attributes you have about yourself are a threat to me. And because you feel that it's a threat to you, you become antagonistic towards the other person. But these are things that I believe that as a society, we can, you know, there's this wish when we say, I wish we could all get along. I think I've said this thing before. But sometimes when you look at the world objectively, you ask yourself critically how possible that can ever be. And when you look at the movies may present to you, oh, happily ever after. You know, you watch a nice movie. At the end of the day, they tell you happily ever after. But by the time you get to the news, you see the world as it really is. The truth about the world. It is not a happily ever after world. People are always angry about something. People always want to change something. We have this dream that we are going to do something to get society to where it is supposed to be. But it appears that this is the same fight that people have been having for generations. And when with that knowledge, you know that there'll be no end. People will be dissatisfied with things forever and ever. It's just going to keep going into this cycle. Our children, our grandchildren, our great-grandchildren will not like it. There'll be pro-life. There'll be pro-life. There'll be pro-abortion. There'll be all sorts of things will be out there. But that somebody now decides that the solution is to carry weaponry and go out there and start killing innocent people to make a statement. I would have more respect for the person that protests and says, I'm burning up. I want to go somewhere and burn people. Burn yourself. You know those people who sacrifice themselves?
Yeah, yeah.
If self-immolate. We know you're serious. Why do you want to go take other people's lives? Do you understand?
Yeah.
Why do you want to take other people's lives?
Like the people that send suicide bombers to commit all those crimes just for
they are drinking tea and coffee or drinking and they are
and they send one, they send two. And this question nobody has ever answered it to me. Why has this person who values the afterlife so much and knows what is knows the reward that's available there? Why has this person not said that, you know what? Let me go.
You should be in a hurry to go, yeah.
Then you will train the next person that you will follow me. Why do they send people to go? Then these same people have dialogues with people. They enjoy the best comforts of life. You know, they have getaway houses. They enjoy earthly pleasures and send young, impressionable people to that death. Those are people who also deserve the death penalty.
Okay.
Yeah.
I think we'll run.
Thank you for listening to our podcast. You can follow our podcast on Facebook at Remote Talkatives, and that's Talkatives with an ER. Or you can follow on Twitter at rtalkatives, and that's also Talkatives with an ER. Now, we post movies that we're going to talk about before we actually publish them on Spotify and any place you listen to your podcast. You can also send us an email at podcast@remotetalkatives.com. You can send us feedback, tell us what you think, suggest a movie, or just basically comment on some of the things that you feel should have happened based on what we have talked about. We welcome feedback. And we thank you once again for listening, and we will see you next week with another discussion.